Hey, parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct honor to welcome back Dr. Robert Malone, who is going to discuss monkeypox with us, exactly what it is, exactly what it isn't. I hope that you guys enjoy this discussion. Dr. Robert Malone, welcome back, doctor.
Hi, Candace. So good to see you again, and thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you for making time.
Let's get business.
Let's jump right into this. So I'm just going to take you through a general timeline that I find to be a bit alarming. So we're told in the 80s that smallpox has been eradicated. Despite this, in 2019, the U.S. FDA approved a vaccine for smallpox. It's called Jynneos. I could be saying that wrong, so I'll spell it for my listeners. That's J-Y-N-N-E-O-S. And it was indicated to prevent smallpox and monkeypox in adults 18 and over. That seems like a very strange thing to do since smallpox is eradicated. And then in March of 2021, at the Munich Security Conference, there was a simulation that was run on reducing high consequence biological threats. The exercise sought to examine gaps in national and international biosecurity and pandemic preparedness. They're always just getting prepared in case. The exercise scenario portrayed a global pandemic involving an unusual strain of monkeypox virus. Fast forward to November of 2021, and Gates called for a new international pandemic task force with a budget of $1 billion per year. And he was also predicting in 2021 a bioterrorist attack involving smallpox. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so, you know, I'm just saying what the facts are. Fast forward to today, and we are being told that we've got cases in about 12 countries of monkeypox. None of the countries, by the way, are in Africa, so that's immediately alarming. Let's first start with just, you know, these repeated exercises, because we saw this with COVID-19. They ran an exercise saying that there was going to be a global outbreak, Event 201, and lo and behold, it happened, right? Either Bill Gates needs to be buying a lottery ticket every single day, and, you know, he's always somehow invested in the vaccines, or he has some sort of foresight and knowledge that these events are going to be occurring. Again, monkeypox, exceedingly rare, even on the continent of Africa, yet alone seeing it in the West. So let's start with how you perceive his repeated involvement in these epidemics and these pandemics.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Bill Gates. And you'll recall in our last conversation, for me, you know, we were really working off of each other in a very positive way. There was a lot of synergism in our thoughts and our conversation. And as you were talking about Bill Gates before, it was the first time I really came to the awareness and I spoke that Bill Gates is fundamentally a monopolist. That's his core competency, is being a monopolist. And he has managed to monopolize public health. And so is he qualified as a biologist? Of course not. Is he a physician? Of course not. He is an enormously wealthy individual. And for some reason, I don't know what makes him tick, he's decided that he needs to not only invest in public health, but basically dominate the whole domain.
Right.
And he has largely successfully done so. And many of us argue to our detriment.
And I just want to also point out for people that don't know, the World Health Organization, I think some people have this idea that it's like a kumbaya and it's all of the countries coming together, when in fact, no, there are countries that give a ton of money to the World Health Organization that are essentially in control and inform its policy. Bill Gates is the only individual that actually gives more than virtually every country. I mean, and I know a couple of years ago, he ranked as the number two giver. He gave more money than the United Kingdom gave, right? The entire country, one man gave more money to influence the World Health Organization. So this isn't some, you know, global agreement or global kumbaya. This is why they turn to him. And when he makes a statement like, we need a a global pandemic treaty, you know, so that we can inform how every single person responds to the next pandemic. It really is amassing a lot of power for himself, who obviously has a lot of influence at the World Health Organization.
We have a situation of an individual that's leveraged his will to really play a major role in global politics and world health. And so then bridging over to his amazing prescience, his ability to somehow foresee the future, he capitalizes a very large number of groups. Around the World Health Organization, there is a lot of satellite organizations that many of which have intelligence community ties that make predictions and analyses about infectious disease. And they generate rankings for threats. And they run these war game scenarios based on those rankings. So the potential threat of monkeypox, you have a war game that was run that, as I recall, the thesis is it's an engineered monkeypox. So that's kind of a surreptitious way of saying this is something like smallpox that we're going to war game out. It is alarming that Mr. Gates feels the need to make these kind of dark prognostications. I think it's highly counterproductive that he does this. I mean, it plays as a, if he was a trained public health official, he would recognize that fear is something that has to be carefully managed, and you don't weaponize fear. You should not weaponize fear in any public health situation, although it's being done, and it was done certainly with coronavirus. But to just go about saying these dark things that causes anxiety and fear in people is highly irresponsible, in my opinion, but he does it. And I guess he is, like Tony Fauci, gets away with things that the rest of us wouldn't get away with because he has so much power and akin to Tony or money in the case of Bill. So that's where we're at. Bill Gates, in my opinion, is something that has to be endured. Hopefully we outlive this period, all of us. But I don't know how we can create a situation where he is incentivized to be more responsible.
Right. And
to listen more and talk less. But, you know, that's the man.
Well, I talk often on this show about how fear becomes this mechanism for people to gather a lot of power. Once they know that you're fearful, they know that you will acquiesce to having certain freedoms taken away from you. And we obviously saw this all throughout the COVID pandemic. You know, stay at home, don't go to work. Agree to let, you know, the government send you essentially welfare while you're not working, and it created a system of dependency while the rich got richer. You know, we minted, I think, 9 to 12 new billionaires throughout that process, and it certainly wasn't the individuals that they were governing. And I do believe that education and being knowledgeable about what these things are will help people triumph their fears. So we're going to take a very brief break, and I want to come back to you, and I want you to explain exactly what monkeypox is. Somebody listening to this show might be thinking, what is monkeypox? What even is smallpox? I didn't grow up during that. What are we even talking about? So we're going to take a brief break, and we'll get right back to get your educational download on what it is we're even talking about. Doesn't take much to realize that our economy in this moment is in dire straits. You're already starting to see those ripple effects in the housing market as people's buying power has completely diminished. Have you considered what could happen in the stock market if our economy completely stalls out? Well, don't wait until that happens. Take some of your profits from the stock market now and solidify them with gold from Birch Gold. Throughout history, gold has maintained its value better than any other investment in the world. Text Candace to 989898 for a free zero-obligation info kit on holding gold in a tax-sheltered retirement account. Join the thousands of happy Birch Gold customers with countless five-star reviews and A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. I trust professionals at Birch Gold. Text Candace to 989898 and secure the gains that you've made while you can. What I want to do right now is to just give you guys a live what is monkeypox. Monkeypox and smallpox for dummies, because the only way that you're going to triumph your fears is if you have a real understanding of what it is that we are even facing. So, Dr. Robert Malone, take it away.
What's the most important thing to understand at the start is that there's a lot of pictures being shown about smallpox by legacy media, and there's a lot of talk about monkeypox being related to smallpox. It's true that it is related, but monkeypox and many other viruses in this same category as smallpox are not very risky for humans. They are associated with a variety of different animals. There's a cowpox that was used to vaccinate people. This is how Edward Jenner is credited with coming up with the first smallpox vaccines. There's camelpox. There's horsepox. There's many other of these pox viruses that are not lethal in the same way that smallpox was. This monkeypox is something which has been indigenous in Africa for probably millennia. It was first detected in 1958 in a monkey troop, in colobus monkeys. And so that's why it has the name. But it actually infects a lot of other animals, particularly rodents. Now, there was an outbreak of monkeypox in the United States in 2003. So we've been down this, we've seen this movie before. What happened in that case was some African deep-pouched rats and other rodents were imported into the United States, and somehow they got in contact with the prairie dog population in the Midwest. And the prairie dogs got infected with the monkeypox, and they spread it all over their prairie dog towns. That there was some people infected. I don't recall there were any deaths. So monkeypox is something which can infect humans. It resides in many different animals, particularly in Africa. There are two major groups of monkeypox viruses. We call them clades. One is a Congo clade and one is a West African clade. The West African clade is the less risky clade for humans. And what is infecting people that have been at these two big parties, or the people they've contacted, that being the party in Spain and the party in Belgium, where this all got kicked off. Those people are all infected with the West African clade, and so that's the least of the two. The clinical presentation starts off with flu-like symptoms. You can spread monkeypox through a cough or spittle, that's true. It does stay on your body when you're infected. And so you can infect others by close contact. That's why it's not that it's carried in semen or that body fluids are particular risk. It's the virus on the surface, the mucus, and particularly the little pustules that often form on people's hands or around people's hands that get a crust on them, a lot like chicken pox. Those things are all highly infectious. They're full of virus. And so people that have been infected need to be kept quarantined for about 25 days while the illness takes its course. Just those people, not everybody, but the people around them, their family members, etc., need to not touch them. And they need to wear protective clothing when they help their family member or friend who might be infected. But this is absolutely not a major public health threat. It is something which can easily be contained through classic public health measures like track and trace and quarantine. There is an overreaction happening in some places where driven by the fear that the press is generating, et cetera, there may be some moves. I've heard in at least one state in the United States talk about having to mask people. But in Belgium, for instance, where they've had a major part of these 200 cases worldwide. That's all we're talking about, is 200 cases. They're containing this by quarantining the people who are infected. They're not quarantining the whole country. They're not doing lockdowns. They're not insisting the whole country get masked. And I think that we need to be really careful to not overreact here. And in particular, my friends, you do not have to be afraid of this. If you were in one of these two raves in Spain or in Belgium, and you were engaging in sexual contact or close contact with people there, or people that you've known to be infected, then you should monitor and test for whether or not you develop these symptoms that starts with a flu-like syndrome and progresses to an itchy hand and rash and this eventual development of small lesions that will crust and release a lot of virus. So I hope that helps. This is something that can easily be taken care of by just carefully tracking and tracing. And virtually all of the people from these two big parties that have been identified as infected, as I said, 200 people worldwide at this point as of last night, virtually all of them were men who have sex with men. And so it has a component of close contact, which can include sex, but it is not something that you're going to get when you go to the grocery store or otherwise just go about your life.
And, you know, I do want to say here, just to jump in, like, there's also a financial incentive. And again, if we have learned lessons from what happened during COVID, you know, we saw them actively suppressing treatments that could work to make people better. And the reason was because they wanted there to be no solution but to get the vaccine, to get, a vaccine that's preventative. And I'm wondering if this is the reason that we're first and foremost seeing this fear porn and people are not being level-headed at all in any of their assessments. They're making it seem like it's going to be the bubonic plague. You're going to walk outside, you're going to catch something, and 3 days later, you're going to be dead, which is why I wanted you to present a more realistic clinical picture. Are we going to see another one of these pushes to say, you know what, everybody, because monkeypox is here, despite how unrealistic the clinical picture that we're portraying is, we want you to do the right thing and go out and get vaccinated against it just to protect yourself? Is that a fair prognostication for me to make?
So I hope that that's not the case, and I don't see signs of it. Matter of fact, what I heard yesterday was the White House dialing back on this. Now, there's this odd conjunction not only of the war game scenario having been run almost precisely a year ago and using as a model that there would be an outbreak this month of this year, which is odd. We also have the conjunction of the World Health Organization meeting in which they're advancing this treaty agenda and international health regulation agenda. So there are a bunch of things that come together that seem a little overly convenient. But I believe that you know, whether, let's give the benefit of the doubt, maybe the White House realized that things were getting out of hand. Maybe it's folks like you and me, Candace, standing up and saying, no, this is absolutely not right what you're doing in terms of your communication, that is causing them to back down. Because I think it is making a lot of Americans realize that they've already been through the weaponization of public health information, and this looks an awful lot like it. I don't think it's politically viable. And by the way, there's a lot of backpedaling going on the World Health Organization International Health Regulations agenda. And I think, again, that's because of people in your audience and people that are alert, and in Steve Bannon's audience and in audiences in Europe, in the UK, all. And I just come from a conference in Bath, England, that was very focused on this. And I can tell you there are many African countries that are very upset by the potential loss of sovereignty. This potential loss of sovereignty is a hot button for people all over the world. So I think that the press, you know, the legacy media in CNN is a great stalking horse for this. They're their viewership often is at or below the level of viewers that I get on my daily Substack these days. chew on that for a minute. I don't see how that's a sustainable business model. And so maybe they do have to hype and spin because they don't have any other choice in order to try to build their viewership. I think that they are still an organization that's grossly irresponsible and challenged in many ways. I'd like to talk about the vaccine for a moment. I'm familiar with both this product and ACAM2000. These are even more attenuated than the Dryvax smallpox vaccine that was deployed when Dick Cheney had his fear that we were all going to die of smallpox. And the thing that stopped that deployment was that vaccine, that Dryvax, caused a lot of, wait for it, cardiotoxicity. Hmm. Very similar to the cardiotoxicity that we see with the genetic vaccines. And it was significant enough that they halted the campaign because there was no actual smallpox. So it was a great illustration of risk-benefit ratio. Now, these two smallpox vaccines that the government has licensed for the purpose of putting them into the strategic stockpile, this is kind of like a mutually assured destruction with nuclear weapons. If we have the countermeasures and they're already sitting in storage somewhere in Georgia, then we hope that the bad guys will say, if I'm going to engineer something, I have to engineer a pathogen that is going to not be smallpox-like. And because the United States already has all this vaccine stored. Now, there's one version of the story of this purchase of $119 million, which is that it was actually a previously scheduled purchase to renew the strategic national stockpile in smallpox vaccine. And just fortuitously, it cross-reacts with monkeypox enough that they thought that they could basically present it as a potential treatment for monkeypox. But Candace, the truth is that we have a total of 200 cases as of yesterday in the world of monkeypox, and they're linked to these two large parties and the people that have connected with those people. And it is not spreading like wildfire through Europe and Belgium. It is a bunch of people that all got together in a rave and enjoyed themselves and hadn't been aware that there was somebody in their midst that was infected with this disease. The way that this should be handled is contact tracing and quarantine. So you heard about the Belgian quarantine, and that hit the news on the other side. I mean, we also got to be careful not to overstate on both sides. And so we heard, well, Belgium is doing masks or locking down or quarantining. Well, that's actually the responsible position. If somebody is a close contact or is identified as having monkeypox, the right thing to do is to quarantine them for about 25 days, which is how long it takes for the disease to go through its progression and stop being infectious. Now, another one of the good things about monkeypox, if I can be so liberal as to say good things about something like this, is that it doesn't seem to have a prodrome. It doesn't seem to be infectious before you have symptoms. It seems that it's people with the symptoms, which starts off with a flu-like thing and progresses to this rash on your hands with itchiness and then small vesicles in places in your body, but nothing like smallpox. It can cause scarring and depigmentation like smallpox, but it's nowhere near as severe. It's not majorly life-threatening. And the thing to do is not to vaccinate everybody, it's to do classical public health. Now, Candace, you're familiar with what happened with the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and I was very much on the front lines on that. And you'll recall that with the group that I was helping lead, and then we passed the ball off to Merck, there was the development of this Ebola vaccine for the West African outbreak. And there was a lot of talk about how important that was in that outbreak. The truth is that the reason why that outbreak was quenched was because there was a burial practice in that part of Africa of the dead person lying in state and the family coming around in mourning and grieving for the person and touching the person. And the Ebola virus stays on the body. And the truth is that, as was pointed out by Gavi, and it kind of sounded a little bit like more fear porn by drawing an analogy to Ebola, but the truth is that like Ebola, monkeypox sticks around on the surface of your body for a while, which is why people who are infected should be quarantined, and you shouldn't go and touch and kiss them and hug them or anything else while they're infected. You should quarantine them and give them support, but don't be in personal contact with them without protective gear, just like Ebola. And that's what really quenched the outbreak in West Africa, is just changing people's behavior. So with this one, all we need to do is classic public health measures, trace and track, quarantine for about 25 days. It's not a big deal. It's highly unlikely it's gonna kill anybody. It didn't kill anybody, as I recall, in the prior outbreak associated with the prairie dogs. And there's no reason to deploy the vaccines. And in fact, the vaccines, remember I said the Dryvax product, the historic product, had this problem of cardiotoxicity and other problems. Those problems are reduced, but they're still present in the current vaccines. So there's just no logic to do ring vaccination around a community where somebody's infected or any of that. And if they start deploying those kinds of strategies, then we'll know that they have gone over the deep end like they did with COVID. But I think right now, I think there's been enough of an outcry that this time the government, I hope, is gonna be much more careful and much more grounded in its public health response. So,
I want to pause you right there because I want to ask you.
I think that it's not.
I do want to ask you. We're going to take a brief break, and then when we get back, I just want to, in closing, ask you about that public policy and just kind of check the temperature on how individuals are feeling, even about the concept of being locked down for 25 days. So we're going to take a brief break, and we'll get right back to you to keep talking about public policy. Staring at our screens all day, iPhones, tablets, yeah, not good for our eyes. If you're like me, it causes headaches for you, it can cause digital eye strain, your eyes can even get watery or just makes you tired. That's why I love the Blue Blocks Blue Light computer glasses. These glasses really come in handy during the day when I'm on my computer answering emails and reading up on all the latest news stories to prep for the next show. They have stylish frames that have been featured in GQ and Vogue, and unlike other blue light glasses, Blue Blocks uses science-backed technology to ensure that they work. Since wearing the blue light computer glasses from Blue Blocks, I feel like my eyes have gotten so much better. No more straining. The glasses come in non-prescription, prescription, and reading options. Blue Blocks ships worldwide in rapid time. So go to blueblocks.com/Candace and use coupon code Candace to save 20%. That's blueblocks.com, blueblox.com/Candace and use coupon code Candace to save 20%. All right, guys, we are back with Dr. Robert Malone, and we are discussing public policy potential when it comes to monkeypox. And he has expressed that he believes that the right thing to do, of course, is to simply, if you do have monkeypox, to be quarantined for about 25 days to allow this disease to run its course. Of course, the issue with that is that we just saw the government take so much power from people over what really amounted for most individuals to be a simple cold. I know I am not vaccinated against COVID-19. I've had COVID-19. It was really what I describe as a 48-hour mild flu. And yet people had their entire lives ruined for it. So I guess, Dr. Malone, Do you think that this is even feasible when public trust in what is called public health is so low? I mean, they lied so much. They took so many powers away. They didn't give them back willingly. We were told this is temporary. We were doing things that really amounted to like medieval spells, you know, wearing masks, believing that you could, you know, hold onions and get vampires to go away, hold garlic, pardon, and get vampires to go away from you. And they kept this nonsense up. So I don't believe that some pivot, and now you're going to talk about monkeypox, that people are going to listen to a single word that the government has to say. And I also just don't trust the government at all. Like, I am at a 0% trust level with the government. If they started saying that they wanted to quarantine individuals who had monkeypox, I would fight against it because my trust is so low after COVID.
Yeah, Candace, as usual, you put your thumb right on the issue. I agree. I have been warning about this potential tragedy of the destruction of public trust and faith in public health and faith in physicians and faith in hospitals and faith in all vaccines. Far back, as we saw these behaviors, these weaponization of public health for other agendas be deployed. You raise a key point with also how does this monkeypox outbreak now play into that environment, and we've seen it. We've seen it on both sides. We've seen the overreaction on the media side. The media has now learned about how useful public health outbreak can be in terms of driving clicks and revenue and viewership. And I think that is leading them to overreact. And on the other side, we have this profound fear and trepidation and lack of faith on the part of much of the public, which I think is well-founded. I don't know, you know, I hope that with our discussion and with what I've written and the many media appearances that I've given over the last week, and many of my colleagues, that we can help calm the waters and encourage people to not overreact, not be fear-driven on both sides of the fence, on those that are supporters of these more totalitarian public health measures and those who have come to lose faith in public health. I think this particular one is just going to blow over. I predict that a month and a half from now, we're hardly going to hear anything about monkeypox, and we're going to be back to talking about Ukraine or who knows what. It does seem like we go from fear crisis to fear crisis to fear crisis on almost a continuous basis. Weaponized by these legacy media outlets globally. And a case can be made that that is part of a scheme to control the population. But in this case, I think you're, how could you not be afraid of how we've been managed over the last 2+ years? How could you not be concerned about the integrity and veracity of the Department of Health and Human Services? How could you not be concerned about the World Health Organization? I mean, we're with the groups that I'm helping in the conference that I was just at, the Better Way Conference, we're actively talking about how we can deplatform the World Health Organization, how we can create a parallel organization to replace it. I don't know, Candace, if you're aware that Mr. Putin and the Russian government, as well as Mr. Bolsonaro and the Brazilian government, are talking about withdrawing from the World Health Organization. They're actively engaged in doing so now.
I believe we should do that. I'm a firm believer that we should do it. It is implausibly corrupt. And as I said, I am basically at the standpoint now where absolutely anything that Bill Gates has got his tentacles in, I want nothing to do with, right? And I think that the illusion That this is global cooperative best thing for public health solutions that are coming out of the World Health Organization has completely fallen apart. I'm so for the United States removing its defunding the World Health Organization and getting out.
And Candace, while we're on that thread, you're probably, I'm sure you're tracking these international health regulation modifications that are Health and Human Services submitted last January to WHO. And one of the things that really accentuates your point, underscores your point, is that what I've just heard in Britain at our conference is that there's an active attempt now by the World Health Organization to transfer the authority for the sanctions that would be imposed on those countries that don't comport with whatever Mr. Tedros decrees in terms of responses to any public health threat that he believes should be responded to that represents a major threat. This legislation would authorize sanctions, and apparently there's now a move to move that sanction activity off of the World Health Organization and over to the World Trade Organization, because the World Health Organization doesn't have any mechanism to impose these things and enforce them, but the World Trade Organization does. So they're talking about putting us in a position where if Tedros decides there's a public health emergency, like for instance, he could say gun violence in the United States represents a major public health emergency, and I think that we need to ban all guns. I'm just using an extreme example, but there's no limits on what he can declare a public health emergency in this new modification in the treaty that's now being discussed. And if a country doesn't agree and comport with whatever his prescription is, and he's not a doctor, then they can impose sanctions akin to what we've imposed on Russia for invading Ukraine. That's what's in play, and I think your concerns are entirely valid.
Absolutely, and to all of my listeners, you know, the importance of maintaining our national sovereignty, and people need to understand what would happen if you gave that away. It would be meaningless to say I'm an American citizen. You know, what you are talking about is globalism. What you're talking about is global governance. And by the way, when we say global, we're not talking about every single person involved in this. You're talking about certain individuals who believe that they should be able to exist and make measures outside of our national sovereign interests. People like Bill Gates who say, I've made so much money, I shouldn't have to play by the rules of what America wants. I should be able to say, I'm giving money to the World Health Organization and decide how the entire world responds to something. Like you said, this is somebody that is monopolistic. We have to continue having these conversations. I know we're out of time today with you, Dr. Robert Malone, but I do want to say that I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's because of individuals like us that are going outside of the mainstream media narrative and telling people what's actually going on, that we're able to get people to get fired up about these topics, to say, actually, no, it's not enough. We're not going to accept that we're going to radically transform our society because you want us to remain in a place of fear, you know, constantly in a place of fear. We have to remain a sovereign nation, and we have to also make sure that we continue to have these discussions to understand what freedom is, because as we learned with COVID, you give up a little bit of freedom, and you are going to have to fight like heck to get it back. So thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to keep this discussion going. I know that you've been on a boat, so there's been some background noise, but we really appreciate you taking the time out to have this discussion anyway.
Thank you, Candace. It's my pleasure, and I look forward to the next time we get to have another one of these conversations.
Oh, yeah, I'm bringing you back. We're going to do a long-form one about childhood vaccines one day. I'm telling you, that's on my that's my dream. You and I sitting down,
Absolutely.
Going through the whole list.
Absolutely. I'm sure Dell Bigtree will be glad to join in on that if we want to let him.
That would be so fun. Have you ever heard of data brokers? They collect and sell all of the digital footprints that you leave online. They then stitch together detailed profiles and sell your profile off to a company who delivers you a targeted ad. No biggie, right? Well, you might be surprised to learn that these same data brokers are also selling your information to the Department of Homeland Security and to the IRS. So to mask my digital footprints, I protect myself with ExpressVPN. One of the easiest ways for brokers to aggregate data and tie it back to you is through your device's unique IP address, which also reveals information about your location. When you're connected to ExpressVPN, your IP address is hidden. That makes it much more difficult for data brokers to identify who exactly you are. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of network traffic to keep your data safe from hackers on public Wi-Fi. That's why I have the ExpressVPN app downloaded on all of my devices, my phone, my computer, even my home Wi-Fi router. All I do is tap one button to turn it on, and that's it. I'm protected. It's that easy. So make sure your online activity and data is protected by visiting expressvpn.com/Candace right now and get 3 extra months free through my special link. That's expressvpn.com/Candace, expressvpn.com/Candace to learn more. Thanks for joining me on this segment of Candace. If you liked this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. To watch or listen to the full show, become a member at dailywire.com/subscribe.
Let's be real. French fries are the only good vegetable out there. But unfortunately, they're not a very healthy vegetable. Balance of Nature fruit and veggie capsules are the most convenient way to get your daily intake of fruits and vegetables. You know, like the kind of vegetables that actually count. Balance of Nature uses an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules are fruits and veggies. You need nutrients to function at your best each and every day. Balance of Nature helps you do just that. Go to balanceofnature.com and use promo code WIRE to get 35% off your first fruits and veggie set and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code WIRE.